Chapter 4. But none of that happened. It was the gateway that melted away like a bad dream and never returned. Apparently, the economic collapse was not really all that terrible. Even despite it, the pleated accordions under the windows were filled with steam twice a day, sending waves of warmth rolling through the entire apartment. It was absolutely clear. The dog had drawn the grand prize canine lottery ticket. At least twice every day now, his eyes were filled with tears of gratitude to the sage of Prochestinka Street. And besides that, all the cheval glass mirrors in the drawing room and between the cupboards in the reception room reflected a fortunate and handsome dog. "I'm handsome. Perhaps I'm some unknown dog prince incognito," the dog thought as he stared at the shaggy coffee-coloured dog with a satisfied look on his face, strolling through the vistas of mirror glass. "It's perfectly possible that my grandmother had a fling with a Newfoundland. When I look now, I can see a white patch on my face. Where's that from, I wonder? Filip Filipovich is a man of great taste. He wouldn't pick up just any old mongrel dog off the street." In the course of a week, the dog ate as much as it had during the previous 1.5 hungry months on the street. But that was only by weight, of course. As for the quality of food at Filip Filipovich's home, that went without saying. Even if we disregard the fact that every day Daria Petrovna bought a heap of offcuts at the Smolensky market for 18 kopecks, it is enough merely to mention the dinners in the dining room at 7 o'clock, at which the dog was present despite the elegant Zina's protests. It was during these dinners that the title of deity was finally confirmed on Filip Filipovich. The dog stood on its hind legs and chewed his jacket. The dog learned to recognize the way that Filip Filipovich rang the doorbell, to abrupt resounding peals from the master of the house, and ran barking to meet him in the hallway. His master burst in his silver fox fur, glittering with a million snowy spangles, smelling of mandarins, cigars, perfume, lemons, petrol, eau de cologne, and thick woolen cloth, and his voice boomed through the entire apartment like a megaphone. "Why did you rip the owl to pieces, you swine? Was he bothering you? I said, was he bothering you? Why did you break Professor Metchnikov?" "At least once you should give him a good whipping, Filip Filipovich," Zina said outraged. "Or he'll get completely spoiled. Just look at what he's done to your galoshes."
"Nobody should ever be whipped," Filip Filipovich said, annoyed by the comment. "Remember that once and for all. The only way to influence a human being or an animal is by persuasion. Have you given him any meat today?"
"Good grief, he's eaten us out of house and home. Do you have to ask, Filip Filipovich? I'm amazed he doesn't burst."
"Well, let him eat and enjoy it. What did the owl do to upset you, you hooligan?"
The dog wheedled and whined, creeping around on his belly with his paws twisted out. Then he was dragged with a rumpus by the scruff of his neck through the reception room and into the study. The dog howled and snarled, scrabbling at the carpet and sliding along on his backside as if he were in a circus. The glass-eyed owl was lying on the carpet in the middle of the study with its belly ripped open and some kind of red rag smelling of naphthalene trailing out of it. The portrait bust was lying on the desk, smashed to smithereens.
"I deliberately didn't clear it up so that you could admire it for yourself," Zina declared in a sad voice. "He actually jumped up on the desk, the scoundrel, and then grabbed it, snap, by the tail. Before I could even gather my wits, he'd ripped it to pieces. Rub his face in the owl, Filip Filipovich, to teach him not to go breaking things."
And the howling began. They dragged the dog, who was glued to the carpet, over to the owl to rub his face in it, and the dog's eyes filled with bitter tears as he thought, "Beat me, but only don't throw me out of the apartment."
"Send the owl straight off to the taxidermist today. And there's 8 rubles, and 16 kopecks for the tram. Go to Muir's and buy him a good collar and a chain."
The next day they put a broad, shiny collar round the dog's neck. Just for a moment after he glanced in the mirror, he felt very upset, put his tail between his legs and went off to the bathroom, thinking he might be able to scrape it off against a trunk or a box. But very soon the dog realized that he was simply a fool. Zina took him out on the chain for a walk down Oberhof Lane. The dog walked along like a prisoner, burning with shame.
but once they'd walked along Prochestenka Street as far as Christ Cathedral, he realized the true significance of a collar in life. A furious envy glowed in the eyes of all the dogs they met, and at Myrtle Lane some gangling beast with a docked tail barked at him, "Master's lackey!" and "Creep!" As they were crossing the tram lines, the militiaman gave the collar a glance of delighted respect, and when they came back home, the most unheard-of thing possible happened. Fyodor, the doorman himself, opened the door with his own hand to let Sharik in, remarking to Zina as he did so, "That's a fine fluffy dog Filip Filipovich has got himself, and incredibly fat."
"I should think so. He eats for six," explained Zina, rosy-cheeked and beautiful from the frost.
"A collar's just like a briefcase," the dog quipped to himself and waggled his backside as he walked up to the piano nobile like a genuine aristocrat. Having come to appreciate the collar at its true worth, the dog made his first visit to that most important compartment of paradise, to which he had previously been categorically forbidden entry, the kingdom of the cook, Daria Petrovna herself. The entire apartment was not worth 2 inches of Daria's realm. Every day the flames crackled and roared in the kitchen range with the black front and the tiled top. Against those crimson pillars, Daria Petrovna's face burnt in eternal fiery torment, an unsated passion, gleaming and running with fat. 22 artificial diamonds glittered in her fashionable hairstyle, cut long over the ears with 2 braids of light hair woven into a basket at the back. Golden pans hung on hooks around the walls. The entire kitchen was an uproar of smells and bubbling and hissing in closed vessels.
"Out!" Daria Petrovna howled. "Get out, you homeless pickpocket! You're the last thing I need in here. I'll take the poker to you!"
"What's all this about? What are you barking like that for?" thought the dog, narrowing his eyes benignly. "What kind of pickpocket am I? Can't you see my collar?" And he tried creeping in sideways through the door and sticking his face through first. The dog Sharik had some secret for winning people's hearts. 2 days later, he was already lying beside the basket of coal and watching Daria Petrovna work. She was cutting the heads and legs off helpless hazel grouse with a sharp, narrow knife and then ripping the soft flesh off the bones like some crazed murderer, tearing the entrails out of chickens, twirling something in the mincer. Meanwhile, Sharik worried away at a hazel grouse's head. Daria Petrovna took pieces of well-soaked white bread out of a bowl of milk and mixed them with a meat pulp on a board, poured cream over all of it, sprinkled it with salt, and moulded it into rissoles. The roaring in the stove was like a conflagration. Something squeaked, bubbled, and jumped about on the frying pan. The oven door flew back with a crash to reveal a fearsome inferno of seething, shimmering flame. In the evening, the stone maw's fury abated, and above the white half-curtain, the kitchen window was filled with the dense, solemn Prochestenka night with its solitary star. In the kitchen, the floor was damp, the pans glowed in worn mystery, a fireman's peaked cap lay on the table. Sharik lay on the warm stove like a lion guarding a gate, lifting one ear in curiosity as he watched an excited man with a black moustache and a wide leather belt embrace Daria Petrovna in the room that belonged to her and Zina. Apart from its ghastly pale, powdered nose, Daria Petrovna's entire face blazed with tormented passion. A chink of light lay across a portrait of the man with the black moustache, with an Easter rose hanging from it.
"Attacked me like a real devil," Daria Petrovna muttered in semi-darkness. "Get off! Zina will be here in a moment. What is this? Have they rejuvenated you as well?"
"We don't need any of that," the man with the black moustache replied hoarsely, struggling to control himself. "You're a real fiery one!"
In the evenings, the Prochestenka star was hidden behind heavy curtains, and if Aida was not on at the Bolshoi Theatre and the All-Russian Surgical Society was not in session, the deity would be located in the deep armchair in the study. None of the ceiling lights were lit. The only lamp burning was the green one on the desk. Sharik lay in the shadow on the carpet and gazed in fascination at the appalling goings-on. There were human brains lying in repulsive, cloudy, acrid fluid in glass jars. With his arms bare to the elbows and reddish rubber gloves on his hands, The deity fumbled in the convolutions with slippery, unfeeling fingers. Sometimes the deity would arm himself with a little gleaming knife and gently cut into the yellow, spongy brains.
To the sacred banks of the Nile.
The deity sang quietly to himself, biting on his lips and remembering the golden interior of the Bolshoi Theatre. At that time of the day, pipes were heated to their hottest. The heat from them rose up to the ceiling, from where it spread right round the whole room. The final flea in the dog's coat, not yet combed out by Filip Filipovich, but already doomed, became active. The carpets muffled sounds in the apartment, and then, far away, the front door jangled.
Zinka's gone to the cinema, the dog thought. And when she comes back, I expect we'll have supper. It ought to be veal cutlets today.
And then, in the morning of that terrible day, Sharik was pricked by a premonition that left him feeling suddenly jaded, and he ate his breakfast, half a cup of oat porridge and yesterday's mutton bone, without any appetite at all. He walked through drearily into the reception room and howled quietly at his own reflection there. But that afternoon, after Zina had taken him for a walk to the boulevard, the day continued as usual. There were no patients that day because, as everybody knew, patients were not received on Tuesdays, and the deity was sitting in the study with some heavy books with bright-coloured pictures open on his desk. They were waiting for dinner. The dog's spirits were revived slightly by the thought that today's main course, as he had discovered for certain in the kitchen, was to be turkey. As he walked along the corridor, the dog heard the telephone in Filip Filipovich's study give a harsh, abrupt ring. Filip Filipovich picked up the receiver, listened, and suddenly became excited.
"Excellent," the dog heard his voice say. "Bring it here immediately."
He began bustling about and rang the bell, and when Zina came in, he ordered her to serve dinner immediately.
"Dinner! Dinner! Dinner!"
In the dining room, they began clattering the plates about straight away. As Zina sprang into action, Daria Petrovna could be heard muttering in the kitchen that the turkey was ready. The dog began feeling nervous again.
"I don't like commotion in the apartment," he thought.
And no sooner did he think it than the commotion assumed an even more unpleasant character, primarily due to the appearance of his sometime victim, Dr. Bommental. He brought a nasty-smelling suitcase with him and went dashing through into the examination room with it without even taking his coat off. Filip Filipovich abandoned his unfinished cup of coffee, which was something he never did, and ran out to meet Bommental, which was another thing that he never did.
"When did he die?" he shouted.
3 hours ago," Bommental replied,
leaving his snow-covered fur hat on as he unfastened the suitcase.
"Who is it that's died?" the dog thought in gloomy resentment, and poked his head in under their feet. "I can't stand it when people start running around like lunatics."
"Get out! Out of my way! Quick, quick, quick!"
Filip Filipovich shouted in all directions and started ringing all the bells, or so it seemed to the dog. Zina came running.
"Zina! Bring Daria Petrovna to the phone to take people's names. Don't let anyone in. I need you. Dr. Bommental, I implore you, be quick, quick!"
"I don't like this. I don't like it."
The dog sulked gloomily and began wandering aimlessly around the flat, while all the fuss and bother was concentrated in the examination room. Zina was suddenly wearing a white coat that looked like a shroud, and she began running from the examination room to the kitchen and back.
"Maybe I should go and have a feed?"
To hell with the lot of them, the dog thought, and suddenly received a surprise.
"Don't give Sharik anything!"
came the thunderous command from the examination room.
"Oh, yes, he's so easy to keep an eye on."
"Lock him up!"
And they lured Sharik into the bathroom and locked him in there.
"What an insult," thought Sharik, sitting in the dimly lit bathroom. "This is just plain stupid."
And the dog spent about a quarter of an hour in the bathroom in a strange sort of mood, something between fury and deep depression. Everything seemed so dreary and hazy and uncertain.
"All right, just see what I do to your galoshes again tomorrow, my dear Filip Filipovich," he thought. "You've already had to buy two pairs. Now you'll have to buy another one, to teach you not to go locking dogs up."
But then his vehement line of thought was interrupted. For some reason, he suddenly recalled with perfect clarity a brief episode in his very early youth. The bright, sunny, boundless courtyard at the Preobrazhensky gates, shards of sunshine glinting in bottles, broken bricks, the homeless dogs their own masters. No, you could never. You'll never leave this place for any kind of freedom. No point in lying about it, the dog thought drearily, sniffling as he breathed. You've got used to it. I'm my noble master's dog, a creature of culture. I've tasted a better life. And what is freedom anyway? Nothing but smoke, a mirage, a fiction. The pipe dream of those doomed Democrats. Then the semi-darkness of the bathroom began to seem frightening. He started howling and hurling himself at the door. He started scratching. The sound echoed round the apartment as if it were a barrel. I'll tear the owl to pieces again, the dog thought in helpless spite. Then he felt weak and lay down for a while, and when he got up, the hair of his coat suddenly stood up on end when he thought he saw a pair of loathsome wolf's eyes glowing in the bath. Then, at the very height of his torment, the door opened. The dog went out, shook himself, and set out sullenly for the kitchen. But Zina insistently led him by his collar towards the examination room. The dog felt a cold tremor run through him. What do they need me for? He thought suspiciously. My side's healed up. I don't understand any of this. His stubborn paws started skidding across this slippery parquet, and that was how he was dragged into the examination room. The first thing that struck him was the unaccustomed brilliance of the lighting. The white globe on the ceiling was glowing so brightly that it hurt his eyes. A priest standing in the white radiance chanted under his breath of the sacred banks of the Nile. It was only from the vague scent that the dog could tell it was Filip Filipovich. His close-cropped grey hair was hidden under a white cap that looked like a patriarch's pointed cowl. The priest was dressed all in white, and over the white, like a priest's stole, he had a narrow rubber apron. He had black gloves on his hands. The bitten one was also wearing a pointed cowl. The long table was unfolded, and another small, quadrangular one on a gleaming support had been moved up beside it. Today the dog suddenly hated the bitten one more than ever, and most of all for the way his eyes looked. Usually bold and direct, today they shifted about to avoid the dog's gaze. They were watchful and insincere, and there was some disagreeable, murky business, if not an actual crime, lurking somewhere in their depths. The dog gave him a look of sullen anguish and moved away into the corner. "The collar, Zina," Filip Filipovich said quietly. "Only don't excite him." Zina's eyes immediately became as loathsome as the bitten ones. She went over to the dog and stroked him in a manner that was clearly counterfeit. The dog gave her a look of anguished disdain. "What can I do? There are three of you. Take me if you want, only you ought to be ashamed. If only I'd known what you were going to do with me." Zina unfastened the collar. The dog shook his head and snorted. The bitten one appeared in front of him, giving off a repulsive, numbing smell. "Phew! What filth! Why do I feel so sick and dizzy and afraid?" the dog thought, and backed away from the bitten one. "Quickly, doctor!" Filip Filipovich said impatiently. The air was filled with an acrid, sweetish odour. Without taking his vile, watchful eyes off the dog, the bitten one pulled his right hand from behind his back and thrust a ball of damp cotton wool against the animal's nose. Sharik was dumbfounded. He felt his head beginning to spin slightly, but he just managed to shrink away. The bitten one bounded after him and suddenly smothered his entire face in cotton wool. The dog's breathing was immediately blocked, but he still managed to break free once again. "The villain!" he thought briefly. "What did I do?" And then he was smothered again. Suddenly, at this point, he saw a lake appear in the middle of the examination room, with supremely happy otherworldly dogs, all unbelievably pink, sailing around on it in boats. The bones disappeared from his legs, and they buckled under him. "On to the table!" The jovial words spoken in Filip Filipovich's voice came thudding down and scattered into rivulets of orange. The horror disappeared, and was replaced by joy. For about 2 seconds, the fading dog loved the bitten one. The entire world turned downside up, and there was the cold but pleasant sensation of a hand under his belly. And then, nothing. The dog Sharik lay stretched out on the narrow operating table, with his head hammering helplessly against the white oilcloth pillow. His belly had been shaved clean, and now Dr. Baumenthal, breathing heavily in his haste, was cropping Sharik's head, his mechanical clippers biting into the fur. Filip Filipovich, leaning heavily on his palms against the edge of the table, followed the procedure with his eyes glittering like the gold rims of his spectacles, and said anxiously, "Ivan Arnoldovich, the most important moment is when I go into the Turkish saddle. Instantly, I implore you, hand me the appendage and suture immediately. If it starts bleeding in there, we'll lose time, and we'll lose the dog. But then, he hasn't got a chance in any case." He paused, screwing up an eye, glanced in an odd, quizzical way into the dog's half-closed sleeping eye, and added, "And you know, I feel sorry for him. Just imagine, I've got used to him." He raised his hands as he said this, as if he were blessing the ill-fated dog Sharik for some arduous feat. He was trying to prevent even a single speck of dust settling on the black rubber. The dog's skin gleamed white through his cropped fur. Baumenthal threw aside his clippers and set to work with a razor. He lathered up the helpless little head and began shaving it. The blade made a loud, crunching sound, and here and there blood welled up. After shaving the head, the bitten one wiped it down with a wad of cotton wool moistened with benzene. Then he stretched out the dog's naked stomach and said, panting heavily, "Ready." Zina turned on the tap above the sink, and Baumenthal rushed over to wash his hands. Zina poured alcohol over them from a bottle. "May I go now, Filip Filipovich?" she asked, casting a squeamish sideways glance at the dog's shaved head.
"You may."
Zina disappeared. Baumenthal carried on bustling about. He set light napkins of gauze all around Sharik's head, so that what remained on the pillow was a bald dog's cranium that no one had seen before, and a strange, bearded face. At this point, the priest stirred into action. He straightened up, glanced at the dog's head, and said,
"Bless this work, Lord. The knife."
Baumenthal extracted a small knife with a plump, round blade from the gleaming heap on the little table and handed it to the priest. Then he also donned black gloves, just like the priest.
"Is he sleeping?" asked Filip Filipovich.
"Yes, soundly." Filip Filipovich's teeth clenched together. A sharp, piercing gleam lit up his eyes, and with a flourish of the knife, he drew a long, precise incision down Sharik's belly. The skin parted instantly, and blood spurted out in all directions. Baumenthal dashed over eagerly and started applying pressure to Sharik's wound with lumps of gauze. Then he pressed its sides together with little tweezers like sugar tongs, and it dried up. Beads of sweat stood out on Baumenthal's forehead. Filip Filipovich slashed again, and the two of them began tearing Sharik's body apart with hooks, scissors, and some kind of clamps. Out slipped the pink and yellow tissues, weeping bloody dew. Filip Filipovich twisted the knife in the body and then cried,
"Scissors!"
The instrument flickered through the bitten one's hands as if he were a conjurer. Filip Filipovich went in deep, and with a few twists he tore the seminal vesicles out of Sharik's body, together with some other fragments. Baumenthal, soaking wet from all the stress and strain, dashed over to a glass jar and extracted some other wet, flabby seminal vesicles from it. Short, moist strings began dancing and curling in the hands of the professor and his assistant. The crooked needles began clicking in the clamps, and they sewed the seminal vesicles in where Sharik's had been. The priest leaned back from the wound, thrust a lump of gauze against it, and ordered,
"Suture the skin immediately, doctor."
Then he glanced across at the round white clock on the wall.
"We took 14 minutes.
Baumenthal hissed through clenched teeth and thrust his crooked needle into the flaccid skin. Then they both became as nervous as murderers in a hurry.
"Knife!"
cried Filip Filipovich.
The knife seemed to leap into his hand of its own accord, and then Filip Filipovich's face became terrible. He bared his porcelain and gold crowns in a scowl, and in a single flourish traced a red coronet around Sharik's forehead. They pulled back the skin with the shaved hair like a scalp, and exposed the bone of the skull. Filip Filipovich cried, "Trepan!" Bomental handed him a gleaming handbrace. Biting his lips, Filip Filipovich began jabbing the brace in and drilling little holes in Sharik's cranium about a centimetre apart to form a circle around the entire skull. He spent no more than 5 seconds on each one. Then he took a most curiously fashioned saw, stuck its tail into the first hole and began sawing, in the same way that they cut fretwork designs for ladies' needlework boxes. The skull squeaked quietly and trembled. About 3 minutes later, they removed the top of Sharik's skull. Then the cupola of Sharik's brain was exposed, grey with bluish streaks and reddish blotches. Filip Filipovich worked his way into the membrane with a pair of scissors and opened them up. Just once, a thin fountain of blood spurted out, narrowly missing the professor's eye and sprinkling his cap. Clutching a pair of torsion forceps, Bomental dashed in like a tiger and clamped it. The sweat was streaming off Bomental and his face had turned fleshy and blotchy. His eyes flickered back and forth between the professor's hands and a plate on the table. Filip Filipovich himself had become positively terrifying. Hoarse, wheezing sounds erupted from his nose. His teeth were bared to the gums. He tore the pia mater off the brain and went in deep somewhere, easing the hemispheres up out of their open chalice. At that point, Bomental started to turn pale, grabbed Sharik's chest with one hand and said in a husky voice, "The pulse is falling sharply." Filip Filipovich glanced around him savagely, mumbled something, and cut in even deeper. Bomental broke open a glass ampule with a crunch, drew something out of it into a syringe and insidiously injected Sharik somewhere near the heart. "I'm approaching the Turkish saddle," Filip Filipovich growled and lifted Sharik's greyish-yellow brain out of the head with his bloody slippery gloves. He squinted at Sharik's face for a moment, and Bomental immediately broke open a second ampule of yellow liquid and drew it out into a long syringe. "Into the heart?" he asked timidly.
"Why are you still asking?" the professor roared furiously. "You've let him die 5 times already! Inject it! Would you believe it?"
And as he spoke, his face was like the face of an inspired bandit. The doctor swung his hand and deftly thrust the needle into the dog's heart. "He's alive, but just barely," he whispered timidly.
"No time now to discuss whether he's alive or not,"
rasped the terrifying Filip Filipovich.
"I'm in the saddle. He's going to die anyway. Ah, you... to the sacred banks of the Nile. Give me the appendage."
Bomental handed him a glass jar in which a little white lump was dangling in fluid on a thread. With one hand... "There is no one to match him in Europe, I swear to God," Bomental thought dimly. He plucked up the dangling lump, and with the other cut out one just like it, somewhere deep below the spread hemispheres. He tossed Sharik's little lump onto the plate, inserted the new one in the brain together with its thread, and his short fingers seemed miraculously to have become slim and flexible as he twisted the amber-yellow thread round it to secure it. After that, he threw some kind of stretching frame out of the head, and a pair of forceps, then set the brain back into its bony chalice and asked, more calmly now,
"He's dead, of course."
"A thready pulse," Bomental replied.
"More adrenaline."
The professor flung the pia mater back over the brain, set the sawn-off top of the skull precisely in place, drew the scalp across and roared,
"Suture!"
Bomental sewed up the head in 5 minutes, breaking 3 needles. And now there was Sharik's lifeless, inert face set against a blood-stained background with a circular wound ringing his head. Filip Filipovich promptly withdrew completely, like a sated vampire, tore off one glove, scattering a fine haze of sweat from inside it, ripped the other apart and threw it on the floor, and pressed a bell button on the wall. Zina appeared in the doorway with her face turned away in order not to see Sharik covered in blood. The priest removed his blooded cowl with chalk-white hands and cried,
"A papyrosa for me immediately, Zina. a full set of fresh underwear, and a bath. He rested his chin on the edge of the table, raised the dog's right eyelid with two fingers, glanced into the eye that was clearly dying, and said, "Well, I'll be damned. He's not dead yet. He's going to die anyway. Ah, Dr. Bormental, I feel sorry for the dog. He was affectionate, but cunning.